Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of consciousness. And that means our body, our mind, our spirit. But tonight we're going to talk about the science of this evolution. And people have looked to Mars as a distant cousin or a close cousin. And we are going to be talking with some experts on Mars and some favorite guests of mine on the show here, Doctors JJ and Desiree Hertog, the founders of the Academy for Future Science. But they've been doing some amazing research on all sorts of science regarding Mars, and they also are the founders, one of the founders of the Mars Society. So welcome, Doctors Hertog.
Yes, Alan, thank you, and greetings to everybody throughout the world hearing this program. We live in a very exciting and dynamic universe, and Mars is part of the big picture that we need to know more about.
Right, and before the show, Desiree was talking about the debate that just ended. What were you saying about the debate, Desiree?
Well, this is so exciting because many people, just like politics, will have two sides of this argument. Some people will be in favor of the commercialization of asteroids and other things in space, and some people will be against it, but it's important to know that there's a Senate bill called 1297 that both Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio are the main sponsors of. And it's called the Commercial Space Launch Competitiveness Act. And what's exciting about this is we're looking very seriously at people like Larry Page and others from Google and some of these other big companies in Silicon Valley are looking at going to an asteroid to mine it for its minerals.
Is that a good thing, you feel?
I leave that up to all your listeners, because that's just the same between the Republicans and the Democrats.
I think it's a good thing because we're using the resources of our larger environment. I think it's a way of expanding beyond the planet. So it seems like a good thing. I mean, what do you feel you got?
Well, yeah, actually, if you go back to the United Nations did a Space Act, Space Law Act in the 60s. And this is really what's hung up a lot of things. And I'm saying that in a positive and negative way. You know, the idea is that you can't go selling moon real estate. And people had tried that. There was actually an Israeli who was trying to sell moon lunar real estate.
Really? I have a bridge in Brooklyn I want to sell you.
Exactly. Well, actually, this land really exists, of course, on the moon. Your bridge might not. But the idea is, okay, now what happens? What happens when we go into space? You know, you're absolutely right, Alan. We can't get into space unless there's this economic incentive. I mean, the governments will only pay for so much. We haven't gone back. The U.S. really hasn't gone back to the moon in like 30-some years or even more. So there's no reason for it. There's no benefit economically in terms of what they see.
But let me ask JJ, don't you feel, JJ, going into space opens us up to a greater view of the universe and not just life, but other possibilities? How do you see it?
Very definitely. In fact, in the 1980s, I wrote an article which was published by the American Astrophysical Society called Marketing and Legislation in Outer Space for Martian Resources. And I point out that there are more than 30 different areas where we can make use of materials on Mars, as well as in the whole perspective of a return mission from Mars to build a whole new frontier for civilization. Mars is the planet of stepping stone to our future. So it's a very fantastic stepping stone, even in the history of our planet. It's seen as, of course, as a planet of war, but we see it more recently as a planet of opportunity because the conditions are so similar. And now with the evidence of the vast water reserves in the subsurface area of Mars, we have all the more reason to realize that we have water to support a human habitat.
Right. And so you might say, or your listeners might say, well, what is on an asteroid that's worth going to?
Yes.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of good economic people putting money into this because there is gold, probably. Iridium, silver, palladium, platinum, a lot of the nickels and irons and cobalts, magnesium, aluminums, titaniums, all these are possibilities. And there's a company called Planetary Resources that James Cameron from the Avatar has put financial economics into. that right now just launched a little satellite off of the International Space Station that's doing some preliminary tests. And then shortly after that, they're going to have the next phase of that literally going to an asteroid. And you know, we've already landed on an asteroid.
Right.
In terms of, yeah.
But so, what's the relationship between the asteroid and Mars? What's the connection there?
Well, no, it's just going into space.
It shows feasibility that we can land on a small object. And at the same time, we can look for industrial resources, even from a small object that may have a few kilograms of this or that exotic mineral. But here, Mars, we have a planet very similar to ours in the past tense that would have vast volumes of whatever we're looking for in terms of renewal of our future. You know, Kennedy sent us to the moon with the concept that we will be able to open a brave new world and realize that we're not dependent upon diminishing resources on planet Earth. So the Martian frontier just begs the question. And we know in Houston earlier this year, there was the, quote unquote, the Human Resource Program Investigations Workshop, Integrated Pathways to Mars, which was basically a statement from all the leading NASA scientists on the vast reserves of the Martian frontier.
Right, and you mentioned the Mars Society. We go usually to their annual conferences. This year it was at the Catholic University in Washington, D.C. And one of the people there is this guy named Bas Landerup, who is Mars One. And what he is now a private company who's trying to raise financial resources to send private people on a one-way trip to Mars. And he's been able to not raise the money, but he got a lot of people who want to go. They think this is the most exciting thing, and they'll put them into modules, and they'll keep adding another, you know, people coming like a few years later and a few years later, so that you'll end up with 10 or 12, ultimately maybe 50 people living on Mars on a one-way trip. And I know you didn't see the Martian movie, Alan, because we talked about that earlier.
I want to see it. I do.
Yeah, I know you like movies. It's a great, exciting thing with Matt Damon. He was fantastic. And yeah, he was like a biologist, botanist, and he was able to survive on Mars. I think most people know the story a little bit.
Right.
With just the very, very basics that he created. Well, and Andy Weir was one of the speakers at the last Mars Society conference. And really, most of the science, that's what's really interesting, most of the science in the movie The Martian is a possibility.
Well, let's talk about Mars. I mean, if life could exist there, how come it's not obviously there right now? How come when we look at it, it seems like a sort of dead world?
Well,
that's the whole, should we say, folly of establishment science trying to look at realities that we know are there by virtue of re-examining the 1976 Viking 1 and 2 rover samples that show that out of the tests that were performed, the majority proved the existence of the trigger mechanisms of life on the subsurface soils of the Martian frontier. What we're saying is we cannot be, should we say, working with the old paradigms of looking at Mars simply as a desert-like landscape. We have to be able to look at it in terms of the larger picture. The ancients have given us from all major civilization, but we now know through the optical systems that there is a vast water reserve underneath the surface of Mars, and where there's water, there's life. And so the possibilities are tremendous.
And let me just say, the Keys of Enoch were the first publication of the pyramids on Mars. And we've also written, of course, about the face on Mars and other aspects of that. But the pyramids of Mars, to us, shows that there was a civilization in the ancient, ancient past. And this is something Credo Mutwa, our friend from South Africa, has talked about. And in fact, he claims that his people came from Mars
historically
to the Earth in Maracaibo, which reminds us of Merkaba, to live here after there was maybe like some sort of disaster.
For those who are listening to this program, the Keys of Enoch were published in 1973. And there we have the first pictures of the Lazen Quadrangle pyramids, the major and minor pyramids. The major would be estimated sometimes by various scholars and engineers to be upwards of several hundred times larger than the Great Pyramid of Egypt, known as the Cheops Pyramid. But the point is, how did these pyramids get there in mathematical arrangements?
No,
Along with that, of course, we have other factors that are very overwhelming.
I believe there was an ancient civilization there. I mean, we may even be descendants of beings from Mars. But what is the composition of the land there now? Could it be terraformed? You know, at the end of that movie, Total Recall, Mars becomes terraformed. It becomes, you know, seeds planted. It starts to create oxygen. Is that a possibility?
Well, Chris McKay, who's at NASA here, mostly NASA Ames, has looked at that possibility. And I've actually written personally on terraforming Mars. But there's a big problem, and that is we have a kind of a magnetic field that really has something to do with keeping our atmosphere in place. Our ionosphere, you know, the ozone, all that is part of this great field that the Earth has. Mars at this point does not have a sufficient enough magnetic field to maintain an atmosphere. Now, with that said, one of the major probes going back around 2020 called Mars 2020 is going to have a device that'll actually be able to take some of the carbon dioxide, which is what is 96% of the Mars atmosphere, and transfer that with some hydrogen and other particles to maybe some breathable air. So you'll be able to make air. You won't be able to go outside.
It does have an atmosphere, you're saying. It just doesn't have a breathable human atmosphere.
Well, there's a difference on atmosphere. There is gas in the air. Right. And that gas is 96% CO2 with about 2% nitrogen. And the oxygen is literally less than 1%. And, you know, we mostly have a nitrogen atmosphere with about 21% oxygen, but that's enough for us to live. I mean, people don't realize that oxygen is not the major thing outside when we walk outside. So there's always gases around. But this next probe, the second probe going up in 2020, is going to be able to convert some of the CO2, hopefully, into sufficient oxygen for internal habitat.
Well, if there was a civilization there, and obviously it seems like there was with the face on Mars and the pyramid, did some catastrophe happen to that planet that knocked its electromagnetic sphere out, that leaked the oxygen, and of course destroyed the oceans that probably were flowing and the water that was flowing? I mean, what do you think happened to Mars?
Well, this is the big question, '80s, I published a book called The Sphinx on Mars. It was a bestseller in Mexico. The Face on Mars, also a bestseller that I published with Macmillan Press in Australia, that entertains these various questions. As you know, there was a private computer conference connecting scientists from Stanford Research Institute, NASA, JPL, and other think tanks, looking at the original picture sent back by Mariner and Viking to Planet Earth and Mission Control, and the majority of the scientists involved in this private research setup came away with the realization that there had to be some form of life in the past tense for all of these anomalies that were above the waterline.
One of the things mentioned in the Face on Mars book from Dr. Hertak is that the name actually of Cairo, where the Great Pyramid is in that vicinity, is El Najim Al Khair. And that really means the defeater. And in that sense, it also means Mars. So there was a concept many people believe, and I believe that even Graham Hancock and some others have written about this, that there was a tie-in of the pyramids in the area of Giza to that of recognizing the power of Mars. In fact, supposedly Mars was in a particular position and all of this and that. What I just recently said, and we were down in Mexico talking with Tercer Millennio, which is the TV program connected with Jaime Maussan, is that there's the good possibility that the asteroid belt, and this maybe ties in with some of the asteroids, which exists between Mars and Jupiter, was a planet. This is something called Malduk, and that maybe that exploded for whatever reason, whether it's, ET orientated explosion, you know, or was it a natural disintegration of what could have happened with a comet or something hitting it, but that was enough to perhaps destroy Mars as a civilized planet as well. And there's no doubt, you know, for years when you and I were growing up, Alan, people would look at Mars and then Percival Lovell talked about all the water that ran, and then we were told, oh no, that was a bunch of BS. Right. But now NASA's gone back. All those canals were water canals, and that Mars actually had more water on its surface back in those days than we do on planet Earth.
What days are we talking about? Like how far back in the past?
Unfortunately, well, of course, we're not really standing on Mars and analyzing it. They would put it like a million years ago, but no one really, really knows. But they do know that what they are seeing of all those canals on Mars that was seen by the primitive telescopes that people were looking at were at one time flowing water canals.
That's a question, Alan, about life on Mars. I think the smoking gun came from the Soviet Phobos 2 mission, which in 1989 was making an orbital insertion around the Mars area. And at that time, I was very close to research going on in Russia. And Marina Popovich and her famous husband, Pavel Popovich, who had the second longest record of endurance in outer space, told me privately that the Phobos 2 mission was intercepted by some unknown vehicle technology. And they showed me a picture and also a film, which was later broadcast worldwide through Mexico Televisa. And it was essentially showing a shadow pattern of a technology estimated to be at least 20 kilometers or longer that appeared beside the Soviet technology that then was neutralized or simply disappeared with the loss of $1 billion plus technologies from the European nations connected with Russia doing these alleged or projected experiments. So we're just at the lip of re-understanding all of this from the standpoint of future evidence from the archives of Russia.
Right, so the very last images that this probe from Russia, the Phobos 2, was taking was this shadow vehicle that was kind of watching it or following it, and that was the end. Then the probe went dark.
Really? So very, there's been lots of probes lost on Mars, but let's go back to the canals for a second. Now, if those canals did hold so much water, were those I wouldn't say man-made, but were they natural or were they made by...
Just like Earth, natural, but you know, where there's water, for the most part, and now we've been talking to NASA people, where there's water, there's usually life. And in addition, right now, through finding out about flowing water, which was just released, Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter just released pictures of how literally right now, we can talk about climate change because that's happening on Mars, that there's actually flowing water certain times of the year on Mars. And we believe that Mars is going through a climate change as we are. But that's interesting in its own right. But what NASA is also finding is methane gas.
And yes, methane gas means that organic creatures are releasing that. Isn't that what methane signifies?
Yes, because the point is that it only comes up from time to time. It's not a permanent thing. So something must be happening at certain times to raise the methane. Now, okay, you can analyze it that maybe there's some chemical in the soil's reactions, but I think from looking and talking to most NASA scientists, they expect at least right now that there's bacterial life probably somewhat under the surface on Mars. And that's why in around 2012, there's only certain windows to go to Mars because sometimes like Mars is really far away and you have to kind of figure out when you launch to be able to get Mars to a close place for us, and that's called the Hohmann transfer orbit. It can only take just up to 9 months to get there. It's not a big thing. It's like going and having a kid.
Right.
Anyway, but you have to go at a certain time, and we're sending a probe called Mars 2020, and Europe and Russia, it's called Roscosmos now in terms of their space company, they're sending a probe also around 2012, the 2012 window. 2020 window, year 2020. And they're sending probes that's going to both land there about the same time.
When will it land there? What year?
In 2020.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You'll open your eyes and see the clear picture, the big picture.
Right.
I believe that there's going to be startling revelations regarding Mars that will change your whole concept of evolution.
Well, I agree. I agree with that, too, because my theory is that the methane gas doesn't have to be released by bacteria. It could be be released by living beings, humanoid-type beings that are living under the surface. And
Right.
I mean, that's a big possibility, isn't it? Or a possibility.
We also think all planets, like, you know, have some contact with extraterrestrial life. I mean, we have it. We believe the moon has had it. You know, Mars, you know, you can land anywhere if you have an extraterrestrial spacecraft. So that's, you know, one aspect of being able to go anywhere on the planets. But it's just looking, it's interesting to see where certain types of minerals are that might be beneficial, where water is that might be beneficial. I mean, there's a whole theory that ETs are coming here a lot because of our water, which is a valuable commodity in the universe.
Yes, that's true. Wait, but getting back to Mars, aren't there now currently three different land rovers taking pictures on Mars?
Right. Well, there was Spirit
and Opportunity.
Opportunity and Curiosity. And actually, I think Spirit is not functioning so much anymore. But still, I mean, they've seen amazing things. They've gone all.
Well, what did they discover on Mars? What were the science and what did the images reveal?
Well, I think more than anything is the fact of water and the fact of this kind of life situation that they most people are waiting for. And that's where we think that in 2020 with these two probes, that it'll be Russia, Europe, and the U.S. all being there, all getting the data.
China might be a surprise.
And India.
But to answer your question, besides we talked about surface as well as subsurface vast water areas that are now being investigated, chromium, copper, hematite, lead, rubidium, there's a whole range of very special minerals and resources that are available for large human settlements on Mars. And again, this is the rush that's taking place in space behind the scenes, and this is why it's necessary to have space legislation that will bring us together as unified societies in outer space, because this is so important. It's, again, going to change the whole direction of learning and everything in science and everything in religious philosophy should these artifacts prove to be correct when either the Russians, the Chinese, the Europeans, or the Americans stand face to face with two stones side by side in a very unusual situation. This was pointed out in our book that was published in the 80s that showed parallel structures. You don't have parallel structures under the normal circumstance of geological change.
Well, let's...
The evidence really is overwhelming. What we've seen, however, is that the, shall we say, embargo on the truth, to use Stephen Bassett's terminology, the embargo on truth has not permitted people to see really behind the scenes the vast areas of information that have been privately collected by independent researchers and scientific teams working with the Russian analysis of the American film footage.
Well, you know what's interesting? Let's say Earth would lose its atmosphere. Would it eventually look, or its electromagnetic field, would it end up looking like Mars, let's say in a million years with the cosmic erosion and whatever other elements would... Is that possible? Can we
Definitely. I mean, you have desertification, which is really making the deserts, and you already have that going on in North Africa. You know, years and years ago, North Africa was not a desert. It was actually quite lush, and we know that from remote sensing from technology.
And Robert Schock's work and the work of John Anthony West and the water weathering on the Sphinx, yes.
Yeah, there was like all different animals in the north. We're getting this right now here out in the Pacific Ocean. The water is getting warmer so that fish that have never been off the coast, in fact, I think there was even a recent shark that had never been off the coast, is coming. So, you know, we know climate change can happen, and that's just internal climate change. It's not a major thing like destroying the atmosphere.
Ellen, this is the whole idea of the recent NASA probe called MAVEN, M-A-V-E-N, which is looking at the question of how did Mars lose its atmosphere?
Yes.
MAVEN stands for Mars Atmospheric and Volatile Evolution, and it's looking really at the upper atmosphere area of Mars from 150 kilometers to 6,000. Looking at all possibilities, including solar winds that it could have ripped away and destroyed the Martian atmosphere.
Well, what's your theory, Dr. Hertog?
My theory that I put forth years ago was that a comet possibly came by close enough to steal the atmosphere of Mars.
And that
because we find evidence there that would suggest that the complete absence of an environment that could have supported life in some fashion or simply would have been similar to our planet millions of years ago would have to have taken a major event, a trigger mechanism to remove the complete environment.
Right. So there's really three possibilities. One, that the people living there did themselves in some capacity. And that's not completely impossible here either. We may do the same.
Well, that's what the whole climate concern is all about. That right, we might, yes.
Even when we had the things like Hiroshima and stuff, I mean, when they were setting that up, people didn't know. Would they destroy the whole atmosphere? Would the whole atmosphere just burn completely? Well, that was a smaller event, so to speak, and it didn't have that effect. But there were a lot of people concerned about it. There's people concerned even about the Large Hadron Collider. So you can imagine with the right technology, you could destroy your own atmosphere without, you know, knowing what you're doing, so to speak. So that's number one, or even someone trying to destroy you from a distance. You never know.
Right. So that's one possibility. They destroy their own atmosphere. What's
right. And the second possibility is the comet. And I like to talk about that. But the third possibility is that it's just something in nature. And that's something that also people are talking about. You know, we know we go
about solar winds.
Yeah. Or we go from a northern polar field to a southern polar field that we have shifts of the magnetic fields all the time, every kind of 400,000 years. And there may be other kind of catastrophes that have happened through nature or the planet changing itself.
Well,
so that's
one thing you didn't talk about is that Jupiter is actually emanating more energy than it's taking in. And people say the whole solar climate change is due to Jupiter. Do you have any science about that?
Well, they say Jupiter is like a would-be sun. That's not why you say that, because the sun obviously generates energy. But in actuality, Jupiter is generating some energy just because of it has that kind of field similar to the sun, not as strong. And the point is, of course, that there's so much going on with cosmic rain bombardments and everything that I believe some of our effects, as much as I was for the COP21, the COP21 that just took place in Paris, I mean, a lot of climate change, Dr. Tech and I feel, is also just because of things going on in outer space. And that's why even other planets, if you Google it, you'll find other planets are also heating up.
It's true that there are extra solar monitoring systems in the Martian frontier that have been filmed. We've seen evidence of this, and it's clear that there are other factors that will be resolved by the MAVEN probe that will look at interplanetary control mass ejections from the sun, as well as evidence of dust particles from 150 to 1,000 meters above, or excuse me, kilometers above the Martian surface. So we're really thrilled that we have high-level technology from so many directions now that will resolve once and for all the footprint of history on Mars. And we believe, rather than simply water fossils, the story will be much larger in impact when we see the gargantuan structures in terms of a grid pattern on various positions on the whole Martian frontier.
But Alan, if we can go back to the second possibility of what destroyed it is like something like a comet coming by, hitting at the right, wrong place. You and I and Dr. Tech, I know, were down by Merida, and that's where the Chicxulub crater is.
Yeah, where that killed the dinosaurs, right?
Exactly. 65 million years ago destroyed the dinosaurs and probably affected the entire planet. Now they're looking at something that might have taken place. That was 65 million years ago. But now, 12,000 years ago, or maybe 13,000 years, there was probably some comets that hit in the area of Greenland and northeast Canada. And that may have caused a mini mass extinction called the Quaternary Ice Age.
And well, Graham Hancock thought it went to the northwest and caused a great flooding there, the glaciers. That was 12,000 years ago.
No, that's the same event. What would have happened is if the comet came close to like the Greenland area and then the ice slid off or was hit so much that so much ice went into the water, it stopped that Gulf Stream effect, or the thermohalian convection current, and that changed entirely the entire planet in terms of temperature and brought us into an ice age. But, you know, what's interesting in the States, we don't even realize that there used to be things like horses in the Americas, and they all died out in this extinction. Or
very large horses.
After. There used to be other, mammoths, there used to be rhinoceroses, all different types of animals were on North and South American continents, but we had a massive extinction about 10 to 12,000 years ago. I mean, maybe took a little bit of time for some of the hardier animals to die, but it wasn't until this last cycle, what we call it a cycle, that really, you know, civilization has come back, maybe only to be taken out again. We'll see.
Well, the other thing I want to ask is, do you think, though, that there may be life on Mars now under the surface? I mean, human-type life. Is that something that may still exist as intelligence?
Well, I think we think that any kind of intelligent life, like you said, on our level or greater, would not be limited to the Mars surface. I mean, would not be limited to even Mars.
Or to underground.
Years ago, by General Stubblebine and his team, suggested that there was subsurface life of some sort. And we know from the documents that we released with Jaime Maussan that there have to be some sort of port of entry for these massive vehicle forms, unidentified technology of some sort in the environment of Mars. It just doesn't hang in space. There's obviously underground silos, places that which we simply write as a new mission statement would be the follow-up of what these theories pretend to indicate.
Part of that theory goes along with the moons of Mars. Isn't one of them, is it Phobos?
Phobos, and that's what we were saying about the Russian
Phobos,
Phobos and Deimos.
Phobos and Deimos.
One of them looks artificial.
Yeah, Phobos is going to eventually crash into Mars, but it's many years beyond our lifetime, so you don't have to worry. But some people think it's actually an artificial satellite, you know.
That was Dr. Yosef Spassky of Russia, who years ago suggested that Phobos was an artificial satellite, and this triggered Frank Drake, who was and is a leading astronomer in the United States, to become involved seriously in the quest for life in the past tense on Mars. It was the Russian news releases that were thought to be simply pure propaganda.
You know, people talk about us having a hollow planet. We don't really feel that the core of the Earth in particular is hollow. There's a lot of cavities and places that even chupacabras and other types of entities may be living. But we do feel that there are other planetary spheres that are hollow. And this reminds me of the new Star Wars movie that's coming out. Of course, they had the Death Star and things like that. Of beings literally living in planetary size vehicles that could travel the universe or be in one place. And I heard great things about the new Star Wars movie coming out this Friday, actually, by the way. So I hope everyone gets a chance to see that and enjoy it.
But we could talk about Star Wars, but I do think that the Earth is hollow, and I do think that there could be a civilization inside the Earth, because any sphere that's spinning that has some kind of liquid, even if it's molten lava on the inside, will, due to the gravitational effects, be pushed towards the outer edges, so creating a hollowing in the center. So I think the Earth could actually have a hollow core, Admiral Byrd discovered, or says he
says. But he was going, I don't know if he would say he went all the way into the center, but that's, you know, for a different debate. But let's just say that certain places in space, certain satellites, like maybe Phobos.
Or the moon, for that matter. For the moon might be hollow.
Right, that have a hollow core that other beings could be living, could be using. I mean, I grew up off near Florida, and certainly there's the UFOs that land in the water and go underneath the water and probably underneath the surface of, we'll say, the subsurface floor, and exist in those kind of cavities there as kind of a watcher scenario. So I believe that, you know, there's certainly UFOs that come in and watch and find places to live, not on the surface of the planet, but in other places around the planet, that, and maybe hollow areas around the planet, that they can set up base.
And
Well, let's
So important, Alan, to realize that the Chinese also, who are new players with their Chang'e probe that was launched in December 2013.
To the moon.
To the moon, has taken pictures that validate some of the first releases from independent researchers on the backside of the moon, suggesting that there is clear resolution of structures of vast size that would require intelligent operations.
Right, they found an interesting capstone. I mean, it was really pretty perfectly designed. That was one of the things. And when the astronauts...
The Chinese found what on the moon, you're saying?
Well, they took a picture of something that looks very much like a pyramid capstone, actually. And, you know, whether there's it's deep or whether it's just on the top, whether it's natural formation or whether it's man-made, we still have to go back to the moon now to take
a look. There is that photograph on Mars of the pyramid as well.
Well, of course, we had, well, that's the Elysium.
We were responsible for releasing the first pictures of those pyramids.
The Elysium quadrangle pyramids, the four are in the Keys of Enoch, but there's other pyramids also found on Mars in other places, like Sidonia.
Well, just recently, though, by curiosity, I think I sent you that photograph, and you said you couldn't tell because of the scale, how big it was, but...
That might have been the moon. You sure it wasn't the moon?
No, it was Mars. It was part of the Curiosity roving photos, you know, with those little petrified, like, animals.
I remember seeing that. That was of a smaller size and proportion than what we're talking about in the earlier. Mariner 9 pictures and the blow-ups through image enhancement showed these would be much larger than the pyramids of Egypt and the Giza area. So we're talking about a different size of scale. What's important here is to recognize that there is a variety of architectural forms that form grid patterns on the Martian surface. And the fact that these are arranged in mathematical relationships and Mother Nature doesn't work through straight lines or features that are repeatable would suggest that there's a missing factor here that we need to look at.
Right. No, I think they
put our thinking hats.
Yeah, I think they will find life on Mars and life on other planets within the next 20 years, which will lead, of course, to disclosure of the much bigger phenomena that's been kept secret by the government. So I think it's coming to a head here.
I think it's also important to realize that Mars actually stands for a warrior type of planet. So really, the cause of it losing its atmosphere very well could have been some sort of war explosion situation. We don't, as you know, Alan, we don't think that everything out in space is great. We think that there's a lot of
competition
out there that has to be looked at. And
no, I don't think everything is great. There's just like everybody you meet on the street isn't great. You know, they have their ups and downs, you know. But the thing also that I think we should go into more detail is this whole idea of space law. Like if a company goes to the moon or to an asteroid, how does anyone own anything in space? I mean, who's making the laws for ownership with these big companies, Google? Are they going to buy up the moon? I mean,
this is why you need new space legislation to protect Martian resources. And I argued you have to have treaties that are enforceable. What can be done by insurance, by spacefaring nations that would sign on to these treaties and would take responsibility for following through that they would not rip off vital resources or destroy quote-unquote fossils if found on a certain situation on the Martian frontier that would disrupt interpretation of ancient history. We have to have a type of law regime that modernizes what we have at the United Nations, that we can do the commercialization, the scientific exploration, the human sociology without fear that there's going to be repercussions.
Well, let's go into the history of that, Carol Rosen and the person she worked for, the Wernher von Braun, the guy who invented rocket.
She worked at Fairchild here in Silicon Valley and throughout California, as well as with leading industrial giants. And she was aware very early on that we need protection against environmental hazards.
Right.
In space.
Yeah, go ahead, Desiree.
She's more concerned about bringing any kind of weaponry out into space. She wants to see peace in space. And we all agree with that wholeheartedly. regarding the commercialization of space,
yes.
Well, first of all, there's like over 1,500 asteroids, some of which are near Earth. So they're not that far away. You don't have to go beyond Mars to get there. And I think in terms of like Planetary Resources, that's the name of the company that will go, you know, it's a first come, first serve. If they, you know, see something, they can mine it. It's going to be a while till they really start mining and bringing things back. But it's just a commercial venture that they feel is the future.
So you would need to have special protection zones within areas that are being investigated. You would need also prohibition against discharges of chemicals into groundwater. You would need mentors or scientific specialists to work with these problems up there on the high frontier that would be able to monitor in real time situations that would take minutes to solve, as opposed to, shall we say, volumes of time in the transmission from Mars back to Earth.
Right. But who owns that asteroid? I mean, can anyone go to an asteroid?
It's common property.
Right. It's common property.
Wait, what do you mean? Anything?
So it means that no one can grab it as their own. But if you're the only one there, you can take it. Now, this is something that's come up. We used to work with the Space Development Authority with Buzz Aldrin, who was, of course, one of the first seven astronauts.
Second man on the moon.
And the second man on the moon. And his idea was that, you know, what happens if we are, say, even on Mars and we find even the remotest bacterial life?
Right.
Can we go set up, you know, something next door and say, okay, you live there, I live here? Or do we leave the planet completely pristine? Well, you know, we're never the people to leave it pristine if you look at this planet.
So there has to be protective rights of biology, biomes.
Well, are there those laws in place now?
No.
Well, there is something called the space law, the United Nations Space Law Treaty. And but the U.S. right now, because of this House bill that got passed and other things now in the Senate with Rubio and the other guy from Texas, they are now usurping some of that, getting around it in a certain way, saying the space law treaty was mostly for governments, but private individuals doing this or private companies doing this. And a lot of space is moving to private. I have to say,
the UN laws have to be critiqued and be more specific to the situation for protection of resources as well as for control measures in the context of commercialization.
One thing that is really exciting is something like SpaceX by Elon Musk, the guy that's coming out with the Tesla car. Many of you have seen one of those cars. He also is the guy behind SpaceX, which is one of the first successful getting NASA funding for launching into space. And what everyone perceives in the next 20, maybe 50 years, if you want to stretch it, is that individual companies will go into space. You know, when India first explored, they did it as really private companies. Everyone hears about the East Indian Tea Company. Well, that was where the money was. No one was over in India just to explore and shake hands with the neighbors, the natives that were there. They were there to exploit, to get the teas and bring them back. So it's almost like we're repeating situations that we had done in the past, but, you know, it seems to be the way we understand, but we really do have to have some limitations so that if there is life found out there, especially bacterial life, primitive life, that we don't completely destroy it.
Is there a law? Is there a law for that if they find that there is bacteria on Mars? I mean,
propose at the major UN summits. And an article I wrote some years ago called The Meaning of Life on Mars, Examining the Threat of Life, concludes with these words, quote, in building a society and eventual civilization on Mars through cooperation among all nations in preserving water as the future lifeblood of humanity in space, there is a chance of building new life upon the remnants of a once global ocean. This will require serious space legislation.
So what JJ is saying, Dr. JJ is saying, is like, yeah, Gaddafi actually had found ancient water cisterns in his country, and he decided to exploit them for growing food. Well, you know, there was no sustainability on that. So after a while, all the water was gone. So if we go to Mars right now and we start trying to develop the water that's there with no atmosphere, we have to be very, very careful because, you know, 100 years from now or 1,000 years from now, there will no longer be water. So we have to go with a higher understanding of science, and we have to go with a higher understanding of our future.
Would you go, and this is a personal question, Are you interested in going to Mars?
There were thousands. We met some of the people who signed up for the Mars One. This is a private mission from out of Netherlands.
And why are they going? I guess it's an adventure for sure,
yeah,
but
they had all different reasons for going, but you know,
that would be an interesting documentary to,
Believe me, that's what they want to do. They want to raise funding. And once they do it, they're going to be filming like a reality TV show of living on Mars. But you got to go see, everyone has to go see The Martian, and it doesn't have extraterrestrials in it, but it does have Matt Damon, and he's very, very smart. And able to really amazingly tune in to how to survive on Mars. He used actually his own waste products to use it as soil nutrients. He was able to get some water going to keep things happening. He was able to use fuels to make power and keep things warm. Then of course he had problems.
Well, why does Mars have to be a one-way trip? I mean, they brought people back from the moon. Can't they develop technology to blast off from Mars?
I think technology from the other spacefaring nations will be so advanced we won't have to worry about this. People will be able to make a round trip, a possibility. And I want to use this as an occasion before we get off the air to also promote another film released in 2015 called Packing for Mars by the German director Frank Jacob, whom you personally know.
I saw that movie.
The story of what this may involve, that is to say, higher human intelligence is already operating behind the scenes with alien technology and has gone to Mars.
And of course, Dr. Hertak's in that film.
You're in that, but that movie's about Alternative 3. What is Alternative 3? How do you explain that?
Well, no. Basically, it was really the cover-up, I think,
major superpowers on planet Earth knew way back in launching their space program that there were other intriguing features that existed already in space that were on our local planetary neighbors, and through some surreptitious alliance behind the scenes, technology from both the quote-unquote cosmic others and those of advanced human intelligence were cooperating behind the scenes, not only on Mother Earth, but also on Mars. And so Jacob picks up the thread of the story by suggesting that there's too much going on that we know about these unusual features out there in space, monitoring us, watching our military bases, et cetera, to simply say this is a one-way observation experience, that we are already engaged behind the scenes, and that we are aware that there are things on Mars that are earth-shaking. And again, I want to say this cautiously so people can go see the movie and come to their own conclusion. It's just been released, Packing for Mars by Frank Jacob. It's in English, with German subtitles, I believe, and certain other European languages will be added. But it really speaks to these questions that you've raised early in this conversation. What if there's already life on Mars and that there is some type of mutual handshake that's already taken place?
Well, you know, back in 2009, Robert Dean,
yes,
told people there's this interplanetary airport on Mars. What do you make of stuff like that?
I would say he's right on target. From those that I've talked to who have been involved in remote viewing, there definitely are places on Mars that are, should we say, the docking stations for these large vehicles that the Russians have observed.
Right. So we would say, but an airport is not what we think of as some long runway. These airports are up and down
vertical
vehicles. Yeah, hovercraft. They're able to go up and down and inside. And just by changing their frequency, they should be able to go through matter, as you see that even with alien abductions. They can go through matter. They can find a place to exist underneath the ground, and then they can transform their energy and go back into space.
This requires a new type of science, Ellen, which is called future science. Science guided by consciousness. This is what we're all about. We're interested in looking at science of the future and how we will be able to integrate the sociological, the psychological, the cosmological, and the historic record, not only of the human race on Mother Earth, but the possibilities and potentials that we have as cosmic citizens with other planetary systems.
I just want to say, though, Alan, going back to the Martian movie, you take a one-way trip because it's hard to get the fuel to leave Mars again and come back. But With that said, NASA is looking probably in 2037, something like that. And of course, they always keep pushing it off for a round trip manned mission to Mars, where you can literally go there. The problem with that is that you have this type of window. So if you go there, say in 2020, for example, you have to wait at least 9 months or a year on the planet before you get back, because of the type of orbital transfer that happens. Because Mars sometimes is literally on the far end of the sun from us, and sometimes it's very close by. So you have to wait those extra 9 months or a year, depending on the cycle, to be able to get back. And
some of these objects, though, like that shiny disk that was, did you ever see those pictures?
Actually on the surface of Mars?
Yes, that were taken by Curiosity. What do you make of some of the artifacts?
Well, let me put this to you this way. Having released the documents of the official pictures of these huge gargantuan pyramidal forms in the Elysium Quadrangle and other locations, I would rather look at the reality that's already there, that's provable and that's substantiable from the standpoint of remote viewers, as opposed to looking at a few objects on the surface of one of the Martian deserts. In other words, there's too many better things to argue about and put our money and time behind.
Yeah, if I can go back for just a minute, too, to talk about asteroids for a second, just to say, because I know we're wrapping it up here.
No, it's okay. We have time. We can go as long as we want.
Okay, but there's an asteroid redirect mission that NASA's working on, which will actually go out to an asteroid, chop away a little piece of the asteroid with a robotic arm, bring it back to put it in orbit around the moon, and then send an astronaut team on the Orion spacecraft. I think it's very interesting that it's called the Orion spacecraft, but send an astronaut team to actually then do a spacewalk to go capture that piece of asteroid and to test it. So that's one of the missions really planned by NASA. It sounds kind of far out, and that's what's so exciting, that we're on the verge of moving into space, both through government agencies and also by private agencies. We are no longer going to be earthbound. So when things do happen on this planet, we have other possibilities.
So let's give a time frame then. So what's the Mars calendar look like and the outer space
asteroid? The Mars calendar, of course, is the recent work of MAVEN digging deep, revealing the thermosphere, the ionosphere of Mars, the possibility that we will see in the new evidences an answer to how Mars is the planet could lose its atmosphere. The other is to follow up on an earlier mission, the Marsis, that was in 2006, that looked and using radar sounding devices of buried water basins on the Martian surface, and basically showed the importance of the vast water reserve in the Martian subsurface for advanced habitats. Marsis simply means the Mars Advanced Radar or Subsurface Ionospheric Sounding Probe that is bringing, as it were, volumes of new information regarding the subjects of Mars. And my late colleague in Spain, Antonio Ribera, a very famous author of many, many books, believed that there were subsurface habitats on Mars that would be understood before we make this cosmic handshake, Mars being the closest planet of alien intelligence, according to Ribera. So we're at an exciting point of realizing the coming together of future science, future technology, and future sociology, where we'll be able to not only build cities in space, but we'll be able to formulate the right philosophy and psychology to operate with our cosmic friends.
Well, let me just say also that there's going to be a launch planned, you don't know when it happens, but planned, for March 2016 by NASA called InSight. And that is going to be going to Mars and looking at some of the stuff that we've been talking about. Now, that InSight actually is connected with seismic investigations, geodesy, and heat transport. And they're looking at exactly one of the things we were talking about. They want to find out what is the core of that planet, whether it's liquid or it's solid. And what's interesting is when we started doing the research back in the 70s and 80s on Mars, they used to think Mars was like one large crustal shell, and that, you know, you could have had a slippage of the shell and the whole shell slip. But now they realize that there's tectonic plates on Mars, very similar to what we have here on Earth. And that's part of the research that's really going on. But then I think the most exciting other probes is this 2020 launch of both Mars 2020 and the Mars ExoMars, which is from the Russians and the Europeans. And, you know, they were supposed to be launching much earlier. They were going to get there earlier. And I just wonder why these two main probes to look for life are ending up going at the exact same time. I still think, we think that there's been a big cover-up of even the possibility of finding bacterial life on Mars since even the Viking.
And looking at the landforms or geological anomalies on the Martian surface, I want to say this, Alan, for the benefit of the new listeners, we have on our webpage, www.keysofenoch.org, other copies of the Keys of Enoch showing these magnificent pictures of the pyramidal structures on Mars that we've photo-enhanced years ago. And a new edition of the book is available for those who are interested and are looking at the science behind the scenes, and I will call it the myth behind the myth. Please be aware, the Keys of Enoch have been used as a reference guide by many leading engineers and educators throughout the world. That book is available along with some of the other publications that we've made.
So let's be a little prophetic here. And I would say, of course, there's been cover-ups. We thought things were going to be released much earlier. I know many people did on many levels of extraterrestrial research, whether it was from Earth-based or Mars-based or Moon-based. But let's do a prediction that the reason why ExoMars and Mars 2020 are all coming at the same time is that I think the governments have gotten together and said, you know, we can at least start telling the people that life exists outside of Earth. And that will be the first next.
Wait, so you think 2020 will be the
Well, when they land, it may take them a year to start looking to get there.
So you don't think that will happen before, I mean, that's your theory, that it might... That life.
Well, it'll certainly, for Mars, yes. For Mars, that would be.
I think the role of China, that China will play a very unique role in releasing more information on the backside of the moon, which will lead to inquiry and investigations and possibilities of looking more clearly at Mars, our sister planet, for the fuller story. That will happen between 2016 and 2020.
To be honest, I think most people know that life exists in the cosmos.
You don't think disclosure about the, because UFO sightings seem to be increasing worldwide. You know,
well, this is also consistent with our participation in disclosure programs.
Well, yes.
You know, we were involved in the first disclosure program in 1995 in Washington, D.C. This by official
which on Mac
persons
and
who had high-level clearance, mm-hmm. suggest that we are looking at the psychological reasons why this information has been held back.
And I think Hillary Clinton is the disclosure president.
I think that Steven Spielberg and George Lucas and others have prepared the younger generation to accept the fact that we're not alone in the universe.
Right. No, it's not going to be that big a deal.
Other levels of intelligence.
Yeah, but even if Hillary gets in and says something, it's not going to happen until 2017. So that would be the earliest, probably.
I think JJ's right that now that we've been prepared with Close Encounters, which is an amazing movie still, and E.T., it's not going to be what it was in whatever that was, 1937, when Orson Welles did his War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
I think we're much more acceptable, open to the fact that life, of course, exists everywhere. And, you know, if we can go to Mars and develop life or even meet the Martians, if they are still there, which I think they probably are. I think they're underground. I think they discovered these tunnels underground that looked like glass tubes. I remember.
Yeah, there are those kind of worm structures.
Yes, I think that's civilization there, living under the surface. I mean,
I just don't think that they're limited to the living under the surface anymore. I think anyone that's there is able to travel and to the other places, like the backside of the moon.
Well, I don't know. It's all very interesting. I think the whole universe is going to open up. I mean, maybe by 2020, we will have 2020 vision, you know?
That's a very good thing. I love that, Alan. That's a very good thing.
Sure.
I just want to see if anyone's interested in some of the science. You know, Dr. Jack and I put out back in the Viking days, there were actually 4 experiments that they tested. Remember when they landed on Mars, that they tested 4 different experiments to look for life?
What were the experiments?
Well, the different ones, gas exchange, label release. When there's a man, you can find him on YouTube, named Gilbert Levin, who was behind the label release experiment, and he's now coming forward and saying, hey, it showed life. They denied me the ability to say that. I think that's a really exciting thing.
Wait, say that again. What showed life? What was the experiment?
The label release experiment that was conducted by Gilbert Levin.
But what was the
California?
What was the exact experiment?
Well, they put sugars and nutrients with carbon-14, and they looked at for waste products in the atmosphere or in the area where they were heating it up, kind of, in the Viking. And they actually got positive results. They also got positive results actually on several of their other experiments. But see, they weren't ready to release the data. That's the whole thing. They've been knowing since, this is what, back in 76 when Mars was there. They could have said, there's a good possibility that this is showing us life on Mars. 76, how many years ago is that?
At least 40 years.
Don't even count that many years.
So we're in a tremendous Goldilocks zone of realizing life is abundant. And we're just beginning to take our baby steps and realize that we have a great opportunity to put out the positive side, knowing that there are other troublesome atmospheric situations that we have to deal with as a planetary society. But nonetheless, life has survived and will survive. And that's the positive side of the story that we bring to the world. We are part of a larger evolutionary process. And by definition, we are waking up to the cosmic role that we will play, not only as pioneers in space, not only as cosmic citizens, but also as teachers of a whole new reality.
Thanks.
Alan, you recommend the Mars movie, let's also recommend the Star Wars movie, which is coming out this Friday, December 18th. Give a date just for everyone, that's 2015.
Yes.
Episode number 7. It takes place 30 years after the Battle of Endor, which is the last film of Return of the Jedi. You know, they did the middle 3 was at the very, very beginning where he was growing up. He was young. Then the very first 3 were what everyone grew up with, this real Star Wars trilogy. And now they're going 30 years in the future. And they actually took people, you know, many of the original people are there. Harrison Ford will make an appearance, and now Carrie Fisher's own daughter is going to be one of the people. She's not playing Princess Leia's daughter, but she's in the film. This is just really an exciting film. Everyone who's seen it, we haven't yet. Of course, it hasn't really come out to the public. I said it's fantastic. So it makes us all feel like we need to live more in space.
Well, it's very, very exciting times, especially what you're talking about and the fact that this is a much broader, more inhabited cosmos. I think who we considered ourselves to be as humans has been very limited. And these movies like The Martian and Star Wars open us up to considering greater possibilities that can only help our evolution. So that's what's so exciting about these times.
May the force be with you.
And may the happiness of the future be with you. As we say in Greek, ad astra, to the stars, but have a happiness on your heart. Realize that, yes, we have some situations behind the scenes that are the dinosaurs trying to scare us away from our cosmic frontier and our cosmic future. But let us realize that the majority of younger minds and hearts in the world realize that we are part of a much larger evolutionary process. And that's the, do we say, the jackpot of realizing that life is abundant in the universe. Wherever we look with telescopes, we see the basic building blocks of the 20-some meteorites that have crashed into the planet that have Martian materials all suggest the process of the biological building blocks is abundant.
Right. If you want to see more, please go to our website, which is, for this type of topic, futurescience.org. We are the Academy for Future Science.
Right. Do you have just a little more? I just want to ask you one quick question about what happened in Paris. I mean, the Paris climate conference, not the violence.
Right. It's called COP21. Well,
yeah. What do you think about, what are the results, and what do you think about what happened at that conference?
You know, we were actually, of course, in the 10 years after Rio, we were at Rio plus 20 as well, speaking actually at both of those conferences. This one we didn't go to. This is a different division. It's mostly governments coming together. What happened is governments did come together and claim that they are going to reduce sufficiently carbon emissions, but they didn't have a lot of criteria behind it.
In other words, the major producers, China, the United States, and India, will have to go through drastic measures if we're not going to see the temperature rise beyond 2 degrees centigrade.
You know, people think 2 degrees centigrade is really not much.
That's a different scale. That translates approximately at 4 degrees Fahrenheit, which means in areas, marginal areas, where people are dependent upon water, coastal regions for fishing, for survival, your ocean waters are going to change. The fish will migrate. Certain species will simply extinguished because of lack of proper nourishment sources. You're going to have really the death of many species if we do not have a way of enforcement. And so this is the downside of the politicking and the grandstanding in Paris. It's not the words, it's the realization that everybody through the NGOs, non-government organizations, and the universities and the independents has to be sure that the big players live up to their pledges to reduce pollution.
Well, so we'll see. You're saying it looks positive, but we have to see if people uphold their treaty.
Right. I mean, they have to make changes in the technology. California is willing to do that. Other countries like China is really not. I mean, that's one of the things they claim they are, but they haven't really moved forward. So the goal is good, but the process to get to that goal and to keep that goal is not. I mean, they're feeding the seals by hand here because the fish that usually is around San Francisco Bay is no longer existent.
Well, I know you keep putting out great work, and hopefully the people are waking up on the planet, showing that, you know, climate change is a real possibility. And all you have to do is look at Mars to see how we might end up at some point. So,
good perspective.
It could be biospheric collapse as we see if we look simply at the surface of Mars, or it could be renewal if we are strong enough to integrate with the Martian resources, the subsurface water reserves, and realize that we have a whole new generation of pioneers that can find answers and possibly make contact with the, so we say, cosmic architects behind the scene, who've been watching events in our solar system by very sophisticated monitoring systems, we'll simply call the cosmic thermostats.
We actually think that they've been protecting the planet, you know.
I think so, too. So you talk about life in the universe, it's dimensional as well, but we'll get into that in another program, of course.
Okay, so for our other website is keysofenoch.org for anyone that's interested in our more philosophical work.
And
which I recommend, the Keys of Enoch Book of Knowledge is a fantastic testament to the multidimensional nature of the human being. I recommend it. And of course, the conference is coming up. There'll be one in April in Atlanta.
Yeah. As well as futurescience.org, that has some scientific articles we wrote
some time ago. I it's always great talking to both of you. It's you really do your homework. You really understand the from the spiritual to the scientific what we need to do to bring our planet and our humanity to a greater understanding and to live in a peaceful future science world. So thank you for your time.
And thank you, Alan, and all of our dear friends around the world as we bring together consciousness, new energy, and future science as pioneers and architects of a new reality.
And let's all live to be the future Martians and visit outer space.
So be it. That would be fun. Thank you. I've been talking to Dr. J.J. Hertog, Dr. Desiree Hertog, FutureScience.org, the Academy for Future Science, amazing researchers and leaders in the field of consciousness. So thanks for being on New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld. If you want to reach me, you can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net, or you can go to my website, newrealities.com. You can look at a series of videos I've done with the Hertogs on YouTube. Go to youtube.com/newrealities. Thanks for listening, and talk to you soon.